tuned into Tampa Bay's RBLR Sports.
Hi, hello. How are you doing? My name is Liz. This is JD. He's special to the pod.
Good morning.
And this is RBLR Sun. JD, how you doing?
I'm good. You know, I would like to be sad because the U.S. men's national team were knocked out of the World Cup last night as we record this. You know what? It's way easier to get over when you're just like, they weren't good enough. Like, it's just like, I'm not even like, oh, it was so promising. It was like, no, I like woke up and I was over it because I'm like, no, they just were never competitive in that game. And when you've never had a chance and it doesn't like hurt that bad. And then the fact that, and this episode's theme is all of our new Sun signings, has me look into the future and I'm excited about soccer. So I actually feel pretty good. I mean, I am disappointed in the U.S. men, but that's kind of their whole thing the entire time I've been alive. So I'm used to that by now. And I am excited about the Sun. Liz, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm going to be honest. I'm more disappointed that Egypt lost than I think than the men lost, the U.S. men lost, because I really wanted it for Mo Salah.
Yeah. I mean, that was a really great game.
Oh my God. It was so good. It was heartbreaking for Egypt. Absolutely heartbreaking.
Egypt was 80 whatever minutes into a complete robbery, Argentina just saw it through right to the end. I think the subs made a difference, but crazy game. But
yeah, they put like fresh batteries in Messi at halftime or something, which is funny,
I think,
because he's a Duracell, he does a Duracell ad or something.
Yeah, I was gonna say, isn't that literally a commercial?
Yeah.
Speaking of the men's national team though, we kind of did a fun little thing that was kind of a little bit spur of the moment and also last minute. And I mean, we literally, me and Liz, and last night we and our loved ones and a couple other Heatwave members all got together and watched the men's national team game. We called it a Heatwave meetup. Actually, I like the term meetup. You know, it's like a watch party, but like way less official. A watch party sounds like we did it on purpose. A watch party sounds like we warned the bar that we were going to be there.
Instead actually, of just posting and tagging them on Instagram.
Yeah, actually, we didn't tell them we were going to be there. And then when I tagged them, they reposted it like they were cool with it. So,
which is really funny.
Yeah, so we had a Heatwave meetup for the U.S. Women's National Team. I would say it went well. I mean, in typical Heatwave fashion, the numbers were not incredible. And that's okay, because we bring a lot of energy, the few of us that are there.
It's also a Monday night. You know, people get work the next day.
Also, we announced it Sunday night.
We also told people Sunday night that'll do that.
But it got me thinking, because we've talked, RBLR has talked with super producer Eureka. We've talked as kind of the Heat Wave about filling in some of the gaps, because the Sun haven't really had a away game watch party thing going on since the first season. And even in the first season, it was kind of weak. They had like the partner bar program. One of our members went to the bar and they didn't even know that they were supposed to be showing the games. So I just wanted to off the top say, well, that had happened. And if you want to know about things that the Heatwave are doing and Sun fans getting together outside of just official team things, the Heatwave Discord is definitely the place to be for that. So I want to let the listeners know about that if they don't. And then beyond that, if there is any interest from the listeners for RBLR or the Heatwave or both of us, because we're the same people, two-thirds of the same people, hosting a watch party, especially because this upcoming Sun season is 3 away games in a row to start the season. We don't come home until the second month. So if anyone is interested in that, let us know. And also, if you have recommendations for where it would be good, I mean, our games are on Peacock. That's the Premier League partner. So most soccer bars, if not all of them, should have it already. But we want to make sure that it's somebody who is cool with us, bringing a few more people than a normal like dinner party or a normal amount of people. And it would be cool to set up something regular if enough people want to go to it. If it's just me and Liz, I can go to Liz's house and we can watch games. But if it's any bigger than that, you know, let us know if there's interest. But it was pretty fun getting together as kind of a trial run of an idea for it last night. So I just wanted to share that with everybody, and join the Heatwave Discord if you want to be part of planning anything.
Although, I cannot for the life of me remember what the name of the bar was.
It's the Lucky Spartan.
Lucky Spartan. Okay.
Yeah.
I keep thinking Trojan for some reason. And I was like, I'm so close. I was right there.
Yes. I'll give a little more context. The Lucky Spartan is a college bar that's right off of UT's campus. UT are the Spartans. So it is like a rebranded bar. They just changed the name. The sign out front was hand painted. It was very nice, actually, in terms of a watch party. It was the US game. They had it on every single TV, and they were piping in TV audio into the bar, so the atmosphere, despite it wasn't packed, it was full. I think every table had people at it, but it wasn't like standing room only. But the atmosphere is good because it was on every TV and the audio was in there. For us having a watch party, we would probably get like one TV and no audio. So if we could find somebody who would be willing to have more to that, and if we could guarantee we'd bring more people, maybe that's something we can grow in the future. But yeah, we don't have to go back to Lucky Spartan. It wasn't the greatest bar on earth. It was a bar. It's certainly one of the bars in Tampa.
Yes. Yeah, it wasn't bad. And I liked that we picked something kind of close to Blake, just for ease of location.
Yeah. Yeah. So let us know if you have any ideas. If you already watched somewhere, I don't know, maybe some of you already like have a thing with a bartender at a place where you go regularly. I don't know. That could totally be a thing. And we can show up and crash it.
Leave comments on the YouTube, please, for the love of God.
Yes. But this is thankfully, finally, our roster episode. We didn't do an episode last week because there was kind of a lack of news, and it was nice to take a break. I was coming back from traveling, and it was nice to have some time off. But in that time, last week, they announced returning players. And this week, week going from Tuesday to Tuesday, because that's when we record. And this week, they announced signings. And we have a ton of information. So to start, Liz, do you want to just give us a rundown of the returning players? We've already talked about them in the last few episodes, because we knew they would be returning. But just a little rundown. I know she might just be here the whole time, actually.
Yes, one of the disadvantages of you're not watching us on YouTube, by the way, is you don't see a void with eyes cat just rubbing on JD's beard like real cute. Like,
I know, if I had known, I wouldn't have worn a black shirt because she does pretty
blends right.
She's
in.
Doing the thing where she's standing on the edge of the desk and like leaning against my chest while I'm like kind of sat back. So she's like. Yeah, she's like leaning into it. I don't think you can rub on the microphone. I don't think that'll sound good. No, you got to keep it up here. But yes.
Yes.
if you want to just players. Give us the list of the returning players, and then we'll get into the new signings.
Yes. So we've already talked about these. Go look in our episode history if you want to hear about the most of the players that were not announced and we assumed were coming back. These are the confirmed ones. So in no particular order, Viv Bissette, Jordy Listro, Sid Nocello, Brooke Hendricks, Jordan Zaid, Taylor Chisholm, Sabrina McNeil, Shay Connors, Emery Wegner, Liz Beardsley. Taylor Churms.
I was going to say, we're not going to talk about how many typos there were in that very quickly typed list of players.
Yeah.
I do want to point out as well, I haven't checked Instagram in an hour, but as of right now, they did a post for all the players that were leaving. So we know like the departure list, but they did not do any thank you post for the returned loans that I can find. So I want to say thank you, Faith Weber and Maddie Picorni. Faith Weber returning to Denver Summit, Maddie Picorni returning to Racing Louisville. So their parent clubs had a message in their press release when they loaned their players to us that the loans are going to be through the end of the 2025-2026 Super League season. So they're gone. Theoretically, there is a thought maybe that one or both of them could be in negotiations with us. I don't really see that being the case. I don't see why an NWSL club would loan them out and then get rid of them, especially because they both have not played for those clubs yet, theoretically. Faith Weber is a young prospect. I can totally see NWSL bringing her into preseason next year, and seeing what she's got and stuff like that. She might go on loan again to a Super League team this fall. I don't know. She could come on loan to us, I guess, but I would hope that we don't need her services. I hope that we're filling those gaps. We'll talk about it in a little bit. But yes, thank you, Faith Weber and Maddie Picorni. You put on the shirt. You played for the crest. We appreciate you. And maybe the team just forgot And this happened with Tori Haugen. We mentioned it on the pod, and then the next day we mentioned how she wasn't gone, and then they
did. Is gonna do a thank you post.
We can do that.
We're gonna show up the team.
Yes, Faith Weber and Maddie Picorni probably have returned on loan. I don't know. Maybe there's something else going on there, but we'll see. And then the other thing I want to point out, and this is, I think it's nice to have for people, and I don't really understand why it hasn't been done yet, is that new signings have not been articles on the website yet. So there's no new articles on the website since the schedule drop. Now, that was recently, it was like 2 weeks ago, but other than that, there have not been any informational articles posted for departures or for new arrivals. And other clubs have done multiple articles with like a departures list. I mentioned in an episode a couple weeks ago, Lexington did an amazing one that literally said like what year of the contract they were on and what terms their contract was, if it was an option to buy, if it was a whatever, this, that, the other. Like Lexington was very transparent. I understand not every team as a business wants to be that transparent, and nor do they have to be, but zero transparency is, we don't even have an article with like a fake quote from the coach being like, we're happy to have her. None of these have been articles on the site. We're about to go through the new signings. But they all have been social media posts. So Instagram, Twitter, and they've been having a lot of fun with us on social media. The Sun admin has been teasing signings, with little hints of strings of emoji that we have to guess what college the player went to or what team they came from. And at one point I took a picture of my Parkside Super League cards that I got, and I was like, is it any of these players? And then they heavily implied that it was a Brooklyn player, which I only had one Brooklyn card that pretty much spoiled a signing. So yes, if you have not followed the Sun on Instagram or seen that, this was mostly on Twitter, that's where I'm mostly active. We were going back and forth a lot, trying to guess and trying to get information out of admin. And they were willing to give us a little bit. So that was kind of fun. But yes, all of the announcements so far have been on social media. They have not been news articles on the site, so we don't have that little bit of more detail that we will provide you with now. We did research on all the players. Liz and I did our little book reports, and we're going to give you all the information that those articles probably would have mentioned anyways, but we'll do it. It's fine. This is what we do.
And one of the things I definitely forgot to do was how to say our first person's last name, because Chippa? I cannot remember. Okay. All right. Because I knew her nickname, but I was like, oh crap. But how did we get to the nickname? Okay. So Erica Chippa. Okay. So I have to remember, it's like
spelled differently from how it sounds.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm going to have to work on that one. That one's going to be a hard one for me.
I now can spell it right without looking it up again.
That's impressive.
That's how sunbrained I am.
Okay. So she has actually been in Tampa since April. I confirmed this via Instagram. She started posting pictures with the players as early as like April, like mid-April. So I'm not super sure what's going on. She did play 2025. She's an FGCU alum. She had 46 goals and 78 caps. Excuse me. She's the NCAA 2025 goals per game leader. And the reason I thought this was interesting was because of the other notable winners in the past 26 years. Let's go back to last year, 2024. Oh, look, Faith Weber. I wonder where we picked from our players. Some other players that I thought were really interesting that they were also on this very specific list, the NCAA goals per game leader. So for that year, they had the most, you know, goals averaged per game. Rebecca Cook played for Brooklyn last season. She was the 2022 recipient. Katarina Macario, 2019's recipient. Evelyn Viennes, 2018, did it for the Bulls. Kristen Press is one of them, very notable. Christine Sinclair and Abby Wambach. That one, I have to really put me on the floor. That's kind of crazy. very good company for this. She really was going for it in her that season. She has one international cap so far for Croatia. It was a win, a 1-0 against Kosovo in a World Cup qualifier. She did attend the NWSL Combine in December 2025. She was the... Oh, did I forget to put the year for that one? I assume it was 2025 again because a lot of these are... and I was pulling the recent ones. So she was the ASUN Midfielder of the Year in 2025. And she made first team for all ASUN 2023, 2024, and 2025.
Crazy.
It's... I'm excited. I mean, and she's been with us since April? Yeah. April. So I think she's been one of those, like, what do we call it? The Sunshine Squad or whatever.
Yeah.
not the academy players, but like, what Maddie Parsons was doing for a little while, just kind of like on the practice squad. Trying to think of where her possible position would be. I'm thinking maybe in the midfield with Jordy. In place of like where Gabby or Sandrine was or tried to be.
Yeah, I feel like that is pretty likely. She's an advancing midfielder and she loves to have a crack at net. She loves to take a shot. So that'd be really cool. Also think Giamona, I think, with her top of the box.
Okay.
Like, you know, maybe take a long shot, maybe receive,
oh, you know, yeah,
like a deflected cross. Midfielder. Yeah, something like that. I want to mention, just because I looked through our notes, when she was here, when we first heard about her in March, from the social media post, Kiana Kropp was the other player who had an official article written about her where she was doing a trial with the Sun, and Erica Chippa popped up around the same time that happened. So it's possible she did a trial with us. And maybe the Sun's answer was, we can't take you on this season. We like you, Sunshine Squad, and we'll talk next season, which was, you know, 3 months later. And now she's on the roster. So, just as a refresher for anyone who might have missed that episode, an article from Polk Eagles about Polk State students, athletes, came out about Kiana Kropp, where they interviewed her and she explicitly, like, on the record talked about doing a trial for the Sun. So that's why we never get info about trials or, you know, players on the practice squad in an official capacity from the Sun. So this was something we kind of jumped on to get a little bit more info, and Kiana's story was public, and then we saw Erica was around at the same time. So it's possible she could have had the same deal. It's also possible that she wasn't doing a trial like Kiana was, but it seems likely that they might have been in a similar kind of thing where they were just spending time with the team. It would be their first professional contract, either of them, and just to figure out what it's like being around. So I just wanted to give that additional context. But yes, Erica is a very exciting player, a baller, and I'm really excited to see what she can do for us. Our next signing, so I think Erica was last Thursday.
Yeah.
And she was like the only one. And then on Friday, I was at the aquarium and they announced two other signings and I was looking at fish. And then when I got home, I got really excited because one of them was Deja Torbert. So Deja Torbert is a midfielder coming to us directly previously from DC Power. So Super League experience with 23 appearances and 4 goals over there in the last season with DC, the 25-26 season. Originally, she played college ball at UCLA in 2020 to 2021, and then she transferred to Georgia for 2022 through 2024, although in the middle, Georgia won a natty, and she was injured. She was on the bench for the 2023 season, but I think she does get the natty because she was on the team. So congrats to her teammates, and also I'm sure she is, you know, she made the vibes good for that year. When she was playing, though, she assisted 2 goals against USF in 2022, and that is maybe how she got on the radar. I don't know. Maybe Coach Brown was like, I hate her. I'm going to sign her to my professional team eventually. you know, we'll see. We'll see about that. Because she is She's a very promising, she was a very promising prospect, you know, in her college time. That's also represented by her time where she played for the youth national teams, the U14s and U18s. And she also attended camps with U20, although she never got a cap at that level. And then she also was in the 2025 NWSL preseason with the Chicago Stars, or if here in my notes, it says starts, my bad. And she didn't make the roster on the Stars in 2025. So DC picked her up in September and she made her first professional start last September 25th. So like I said, 23 appearances over there and 4 goals. And she's a midfielder pretty solidly. She's staying more back. She's not getting as much into the attack, but she has been known to get kind of up the right. And also that was like how she played in college, was more progressive. And I think in a different team, you know, if we need her to stay back, I think she could be like a supportive playmaker, but she could also get forward and get into the box. So I like this for her versatility. We do like to move our forwards around a lot in this team. And I just think we were weak in the midfield progressing forward last year. So the fact that our first two signings here are midfielders that are known for getting forward a little bit is like really nice to hear. I think it's helping us fix an issue that we might have had. So I think also similar to Erica Chippa, you know, you might see her in a capacity maybe a little bit closer to Nicello if she's moving up the wings, but also kind of a Giamona, staying available near the box, not the point man, not, you know, the fox in the box, but staying available maybe towards the top to get a long shot in or to progress the ball, get some passes in the final third. Definitely like what I see from Deja Torbert, and her second season pro with us should be a good one.
Yeah, I remember being annoyed by her watching when we played DC, so very happy with this pickup. Also from DC, we picked up Alexis Theoret. She is a midfielder. Let me see. So she played for the Virginia Cavaliers in college from 2020 for all 4 years, 2020 to 2024. She had 91 appearances with 4 goals. Prior to her 2024 season, she was named team captain. She appeared in 12 matches before an injury curtailed her season. And it did kind of hinder her starting her professional career, but it did not stop her by any means. She started her professional career with DC in 2025, made 22 appearances, and I think we played 24 games this season or something like that. So she most games she played and then also started. She made the USL Super League Team of the Month in September and October of 2025.
So she's really good in the fall, and that's this whole season is in the fall.
Perfect. That's so, all we need her for.
Exactly, our ringer. and 2 DC signings. And I think there's been a lot of turnover in the league, so you can look at these signings not as we're just getting players that are gone from other teams, like not good enough. I think you look at them as like almost every team other than the top 3 contenders have turned over significant parts of their roster, especially going into the short season. We don't know what it looks like for 2027 yet. I think the terms of the contracts are changing. So like, I don't know exactly what the rules are on that, but it seems like a lot of players were released. So there were some good pickups in there, and Deja and Alexis were absolutely 2 standouts, names that I remember from playing against DC. And that is notable for me. You know, because these rosters are pretty deep. I'm not remembering every single player on an opposing roster. I generally only remember them if they're doing something good or they're evil, and neither of them were evil, so they must have been good. So very exciting, those 2 players coming from DC. And our next signing that was announced, those are the Friday announcements, and then I think we're on a Monday now. Our next signing that was announced was Leah Scarpelli, who came to us from Brooklyn FC. Scarps is how she is known, and also it said it on her kit in Brooklyn. I don't know if we're doing that for her here. That would be cool.
I hope so.
Yes. She is a center back. She can play left back, and she was the captain in Brooklyn as well. She captained the team. She is from New Jersey. She's from Brick Township or Brick, New Jersey. She was very excited to be in Brooklyn, so I actually almost kind of feel bad we're taking her away from that, but also maybe she wants to play for a team that has like more promise. And I think that we're not better. We weren't better last year, but we have more promise this year. So yeah. Going back into our history a little bit, Scarpelli played at Penn State in 2019, and then she transferred to Florida Gulf Coast University from 2020 to 2022. And she was the ASUN Defensive Player of the Year in 2022, which I think, I mean, she would have been Erica Chippa's teammate, right? At least one of those years. I think they overlapped. Maybe 1 year at the very end. And she also had many other honors. She was not just Defensive Player of the Year. There were a couple academic honors I'm not going to bother listing. She's smart too. But one notable thing, which is kind of fun, is that her 45-yard goal in September 2022 from deep in the midfield was the number ones on a SportsCenter top 10. So shout out, Leah. That is just an intangible award that is a goofy one, but it was number one on the top plays on SportsCenter. So that is, that's college like completed right there. If you got on the SportsCenter.
This is the hard hitting journalism that our listeners. Yeah.
Her pro debut, her first pro offer came from Sporting Club de Portugal. She only made one appearance over there, but it got her into the professional environment. And then she went down to the A-League for Brisbane with the Roar, and she made 17 appearances there. So 18 appearances total outside of the United States. Not a huge number by any means, but she did travel. She did experience the pro level in Australia, in Portugal. And then she was called back home, like I said, near her home to Brooklyn. And she made 49 appearances from 2024 to 2026 for Brooklyn FC, ultimately captaining them. She is definitely a leader type. She is definitely a strong center back. And also, she knows how to get forward. She scored a goal last year. I think it was at Olympico, off of a corner. And she's available moving forward every once in a while. She'll make a run. So that's kind of entertaining. And I look forward to seeing what she can bring to the table. I definitely think she starts. For us, looking at our current roster, I'm not 100% sure who I would rotate her out for. We'll have to see how they all are in training. There's been an off season. They've had time to get strong and get fit or stay fit, you know? So I'm not going to start putting together my dream roster just yet. But to me, Scarpelli, being a captain of another team, she's probably not going to be our captain. Listro's got that locked down. But she is, being a leadership type, I think she should go right into that back line. Game one, in my opinion.
And she's becoming such a stereotype, just another New Yorker moving to Florida.
You know, I didn't think about that. You know, we're going to have some words, Scarps.
Yeah. We also picked up Kelsey Hill, a midfielder from Brooklyn as well. She had a very interesting college career. She unfortunately missed her entire senior collegiate season due to breaking her hip, which is just a wild injury. But it probably would have looked very similar to her junior year in 2021, where, quote, Hill started all 22 games as part of a defensive unit that recorded 13 shutouts, one short of the school record, and achieved the best goals against average in the can't remember what WCC is. I think it's like Western something conference.
Oh, I wrote it in the next... it's a West Coast conference.
West Coast. So knows how to lead a defense for sure. She played one season for the Danish club Odense Boldklub Q starting in January 2024. She played every match, all 10, and scored one goal. By July of that same year, she was transferred to Brooklyn FC in the most expensive transfer in the, I looked up how to say this earlier. It's like Vinligen?
Sure.
It's just called A-Liga. It's much easier to say. So it was their biggest transfer ever in this Danish league. She has made 52 appearances for Brooklyn since, and has made the Super League Team of the Month in February 2025 and September 2025. So one for each year.
Our next signing also went to Pepperdine. and it's Tori Sierenberg, I believe is like the German Sierenberg pronunciation. She was at Pepperdine from 2020 to 2025, and she started 64 out of 65 games in four seasons. That is a great stat for a college player. They tend to rotate a lot, give other players opportunity. Nope, she said, this is my spot, and I need to rest exactly once in 4 years. And that's what she did. Oh, and by the way, she plays midfield and forward. In 2023, she was the first ever WCC Player of the Year from Pepperdine University. And then she was also the All-WCC first team among, again, a bunch of other honors, academic and coaches and et cetera. She was described as a quick forward with a knack for scoring game-winning goals. Cool stat. Something we absolutely were missing last season. So that would be cool if she can reignite her college spark for game-winning goals. That is definitely something I would love to see the Sun scoring more of. In 2025, she signed to Spokane Zephyr, had 20 appearances, 15 of those were starts, 4 goals, but I wanted to note that having 20 appearances, that she was part of like a forward rotation. She played most of the games, but not all of them. But even without playing all the games, she had the second most chances created on the team in that season with 25 chances created. So she was definitely having an impact, even if she wasn't scoring the goals, even if she wasn't starting every game. If she was out there, chances were happening. So I could see her as kind of a striker pair with Connors. Or she's also been known for working her way up the left wing. That's somewhere where we have been weak. I can't even tell you who our left winger was last year. It was Sabrina McNeil, but she's also a left wing back. We need a dedicated player to get forward. So I am excited to see her work. I know Connors can also play the left wing as well. So it could be the two of them up front. It could be one of them on the left. It could be the other on the left. Either way, the fact that we have two players that I know can play those positions and score goals from it, I like a lot. So I'm very looking forward to seeing Tori's involvement with the Sun this year as well.
Last but certainly not least, we have Kennedy White, a forward. She attended Bowling Green University for 3 years from 2019 to 2022 and had 66 appearances with 27 goals. She spent 1 year at Mississippi State with 22 appearances and 2 goals. I got mixed information on how many games are actually in the season, but I think she started every single, or she was in every single game that season. She played last for the Australian side, Melbourne Victory FC, where she scored 4 goals in her first 2 league appearances, ending on 14 appearances with 8 goals.
Solid.
Yeah, we couldn't find a ton of information about her, unfortunately. So hopefully when the team actually puts out a report, they can tell us more.
I will note Melbourne Victory is my favorite A-League team. I have not watched the women's team, but on the men's side. So that's my goat, apparently, but I just learned. we also had, Brian said you can't call into the show. You absolutely can. You just have to put your question in Discord and give me time to respond. Ryan asked a question in the Heatwave Discord earlier today. Why do we look at the A-League so much for players recently? We have Shea Connors come from there. Now we have Kennedy White came from there. Obviously, Leah Scarpelli spent some time there as well. So why are we looking at the A-League? And I knew there would be some information out there, and I wanted to pass it along to you because I did learn a few things today. So if you've heard of the Opta rankings, you know that they are a kind of an attempt at a universal ranking system of all clubs in both men's and women's soccer. I was going to say professional soccer. They have amateur clubs on there too. Opta works by doing like player stat ratings, but also based on how the teams play against each other, like quality of opponent, things like that. It's a very complicated ranking system. And on the men's side, it's very reliable. Well, it's pretty reliable. It's not going to tell you who guaranteed wins every game, but it'll tell you that XYZ European team is 50 teams above XYZ MLS team or whatever. You know, it's a way to kind of contextualize world football. Anyways, the Opta rankings have the A-League fully above the USL Super League. It has the USL Super League actually ranked pretty terribly. The Australian equivalent of the Super League currently, 2 spots above the Sun on Opta, is a third tier Australian side that's semi-pro. So whether or not that may be true, it's hard to tell because Opta rankings don't, women's teams don't play nearly as often against like cross leagues, cross divisions, cross country as men's teams do. So like the top of the men's Opta rankings are all Champions League teams. They all play each other in Champions Europa, all these opportunities. And also like you have more information from international players as well. So the women's rankings are going to be, I think, a little bit less reliable, less true. I mean, I'm not in denial that the USL Super League could be a genuinely terrible league compared to the rest of the world. It's totally possible. But I do think it's reasonable to understand that a more established women's league like the A-League in a country that does like women's soccer quite a bit, Australia, would be better than us. That's their top division. It's the teams are attached to larger men's sides and there's a lot of money in there. So they have been able to hire good players. So I wanted to note that the A-League is fully above the USL Super League, but also fully below NWSL in terms of the rankings. And when I say fully, I mean all of the NWSL teams are ranked above all of the A-League teams, which are ranked all above the USL Super League teams. So in my opinion, if we are pulling players who were okay in the A-League, if they got by, if they got a few starts, if they scored a few goals, if they were a part of their team in the A-League, they should be good in the Super League, or at least above average, or like average. Even if they were average or a little bit below average in the A-League. That is the top division in a country that is probably as developed on the women's side as we are, just not the top end quality. I mean, they have Sam Kerr, so she's the GOAT. So I think it's a reasonable way to approach looking at new players is by saying, well, we want Americans that doesn't take up international roster spots. We can bring them home, but we don't want to look at the NWSL benches because the NWSL benches are players that could be in NWSL or their prospects, their young players that NWSL teams aren't willing to give up. A Faith Weber, for example. She's on loan because Denver wants to play her eventually. She looked very promising in college. We're probably not going to get her back in that context. So if we look across the pond, if we look across the pond and say, well, the A-League has some Americans in it, Kendi White, Shea Connors, and their quality of play is a little bit lower than NWSL, but it's better than what we currently have, then players over there should fare well when they come back over here. And again, it's an opportunity for American players to come home. It's an opportunity for us not to take up an international roster slot. We are looking overseas, but we don't have to get an international player. There are a few Americans in the A-League. Think of the A-League as a place where players could go that got bounced from NWSL before the Super League existed, you know? And so I think it is pretty reasonable to look over there and say there's some opportunity there to bring in some A-League players. I would love for us to look at the A-League even for an international slot player. There's definitely opportunity there that those players, you know, at the top end of the A-League, they're probably trying to get to a league like the NWSL or the Women's Super League in England. But if that's not working out for them or not panning out, there's an opportunity for us to get good players there. So, yeah, I wanted to contextualize it. Here are the literal numbers. The Melbourne Victory, where Kennedy White came from, is ranked 185 in the women's Opta rankings. And I don't think anyone is ready to hear this number. The Sun are ranked 528th. They're 185th. We are 528th. Again, we have, I think, total, the USL Super League has played like 5 friendlies against NWSL teams total ever. So yeah, there's not a lot of comparative data for that ranking to be up to date. The teams around us in that ranking, well, I think Brooklyn is like 1 or 2 above or below us. I don't remember. But the teams around us in that ranking are amateur teams or semi-pro teams. So we don't know how accurate that is. But I think it's safe to say Melbourne is probably a better team than what the Sun put together last year. Also, the Sun are on the very low end of that ranking. I want to say the highest end Super League teams were in the low 500s or even up into the 400s. Because they were much better teams than the Sun were last year. But yes, that's a crazy disparity. And it absolutely makes sense to look to the A-League to say, well, we're not going to pull a lot of players away, young players, promising players away from the NWSL. They definitely want to keep them in their system. So maybe the A-League has some prospects for us. And I think we found that. And just for additional context, Sydney FC, which is where Shea Connors came from last year, is ranked 317th. So even the A-League has a huge discrepancy. You know, one of the teams at 185, one of them at 300. The rankings are kind of wild. Don't put too much stock in the actual numbers. But I think it's safe to say the A-League overall is a better league than the Super League. And us getting players from there is a good idea. And I think it's I think it could definitely be very promising. You know, if the rest of these signings are us filling out our roster with a few Super League mainstays who have started for most of the games in a season or two seasons for another Super League team, adding in a few better quality players from international leagues, if that's where they come from, is a good idea. So that's your answer.
No, I mean, the A-League is a well-developed league because for the longest time, women's soccer wasn't a year long thing. It was like a couple of months, a short sprint season. So these players, they had to get a paycheck. They had to get healthcare somewhere. They would go to Europe. A lot of players went to Australia because that's where the opportunities were. They would go to Australia for 6 months. They come back to the US for 6 months. They'd be going back and forth. So the A-League is a really well-developed league because of the NWSL, honestly. Eventually, the eventual NWSL. And it does make perfect sense to be looking for players from there. We pulled Hannah Keane from there. Charlotte McLean wasn't international, but she was playing in the Australian league there. So it makes perfect sense that we're looking there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. And I think it's an interesting like solution to a problem. Not that the NWSL is a problem. NWSL stands are going to like hang me, but, that we're not going to pull players away from them. And
yeah,
we want to add a couple good pieces and we can do that. So I think it's an interesting solution to that. And in more general Super League news, big picture, scary in to a degree, but maybe it's okay in the end. I have some hope core right at the end for you. We got the news last week that Atletico Dallas purchased Dallas Trinity. Dallas Trinity is a Super League team. We've played against them. You know them. Atletico Dallas is a brand new team that you may not have heard of because they are joining the USL Championship next season. So they have not kicked a ball yet on the men's side. They were a brand new organization. And last week we got the news that Atletico purchased Trinity to unite professional soccer in Dallas under USL Dallas LLC, I believe is the name of the new holding company. We got absolutely no details when the first release came out. We just knew one team bought the other. And I think we knew that the Trinity owners were fully out. It was not like a merge in ownership. It was just the Trinity owners exited and Atletico Dallas took over. But Dennis McGowan, over at Third Degree, which is a Dallas soccer blog, they cover all the teams in the DFW. Did a great write-up where he talked directly to the Atletico Dallas owners in reference to the Trinity purchase. And we got a ton of really good info. There's way more that I'm going to share on this podcast because we are a Sun podcast and I do try to keep it pretty focused on our team. But some of the details seem to be relevant for the Super League overall. But if you're kind of a sicko like me and you want all the details about all the teams that you can possibly get, especially independent reporting, which we are a big fan of, the Third Degree article on this is really good and it's a great read. So I would recommend going and checking it out, but I'll give you some cliff notes right here. So the Atletico Dallas owners purchased the team in a 1 month transaction with USL doing the transaction was with USL. So that means the Trinity owners had already exited and USL was trying to find a buyer. This is bad. Let me spell it out for you. Black and white. That is not a good thing. The ownership did not put the team up for sale and wait to find a buyer themselves. They were gone and the USL had to keep the team afloat or whatever the functional version of that was. The USL had to find a buyer and they looked at their ownership groups and Atletico Dallas was getting started and they reached out and within a month they closed the deal and sold the Trinity to Atletico Dallas. This is a pretty big save for USL HQ, because if the Trinity had folded, which is what would have happened if Atletico Dallas did not buy them, if Trinity had folded, the Super League would have been down to seven teams. Ignore a schedule being delayed. We might not have a league this season, this next season. I in my opinion, the other ownerships do want to be there. At least most of them do. So I think we would have had to take D2 sanctioning. Obviously, having eight teams is a requirement to be D1, among other things. So if we lost one more of the teams, remember we had nine and we lost Spokane, we would have had to probably go D2. I don't think the league would have fully folded, but it wouldn't have been good news. It would have been a bad thing. I think it would have been on the road to the league folding. So this was a save from UHL or USL HQ stepping in. And that's kind of spooky. So don't love to hear that. Obviously, Spokane folded. We've heard rumors about other teams. We hope they're all healthy. The league released a schedule. I feel like that makes them feel like they're fairly confident all the other teams will at least play this fall season, and we'll see moving forwards. Excuse me. For Dallas's sake, I think this is actually a good thing. Atletico and Trinity were already both going to play in the Cotton Bowl together, so they were going to have the same facility. Now that is managed by a single company. There will be no disputes. They will be fully united in terms of any upgrades they want to bring to the facility, which Atletico is very motivated to bring upgrades to the Cotton Bowl. If you guys don't know, the Cotton Bowl holds 93 or 99,000 people. It is a huge stadium that is used for one large football game a year and almost nothing else. I don't know if you knew that. There is no team that plays their home games at the Cotton Bowl until the Trinity came in and made it their regular home. So it's this huge, cavernous American football bowl that the Trinity have been getting 3,000 people into or so. I think they had 6,000 or 7,000 people at their Barcelona friendly when Barcelona came over and they played. So Atletico Dallas was super motivated to get a ton of upgrades done to the stadium to increase the atmosphere. They wanted to squish people together, put them in sections together, make it feel a little bit more dense. Trinity was more okay with keeping everyone spread out, but Atletico was like, we want to come in and we want to make it our stadium. They wanted to add a supporter section. I didn't see if that meant like a standing section, but they said they wanted to add like a dedicated supporter section behind one of the goals. So Atletico had these big ambitions, and now Trinity is under that same roof. So now Trinity also has these ambitions, and they can execute for both teams having these same benefits. Obviously, if Atletico upgraded the stadium, Trinity would have benefited from it already. But again, now it's all the same business. They can serve the same thing. And not mentioned in this article, but things that Atletico Dallas were already working on is multiple facilities outside of the stadium in the immediate area around it to kind of build like a local area. They had like a pub, they had a mini pitch, a merch store, things like that. It's already kind of, I think it's a fairground. I think the stadium sits on a fairground. So yeah, it already has some of those facilities in a way, but they were going to make Atletico Dallas dedicated facilities like that. And they also are, I believe they committed to building a training facility now for both teams, a separate facility for each team. Or maybe they added on a Trinity part to their already planned Atletico Dallas one. So those are good things. The USL Dallas company overall consists of 15 investors, and the interviewee in this article said that all parties know the economics that they're looking at. So that is promising for Dallas that the investors have deep pockets. I think they said they have at least two billionaires involved in that as well, not spending billions on the team, but people with deep pockets that if you say, I have a good idea and here's what we need to do to execute it, you know, they may be able to bankroll it. All of that sounds pretty good. I think Trinity has landed in an okay place. But this is a direct quote from the article that I found most interesting. And there might be a little bit of hope core because it's been very easy to feel doomer about the Super League. And you absolutely should still be skeptical even after I read this quote. The reality is that every single owner in this league lose money. So I'm not going to say that, oh, and this can continue forever and it's all sunshine and rainbows. There's absolutely any economic condition, downturn, outside effects can affect our league and can affect the ability for it to continue. But I will say this quote I found very interesting because it put kind of a positive spin on recent happenings in USL headquarters. And so I'll read that now. The new owners, this is the quote, the new owners are making a bet that the Super League's ownership is about to get stronger. After private equity money came in and the founding family stepped back, I'm putting in parentheses from USL HQ is what they mean. The founding family, the Papadakis family, stepped back from USL. the board was reconfigured, and the group says the tenor of governance has shifted towards more ambitious owners and tighter financial vetting. They would not have bought in, they say, if they thought the league was sinking. So these are money people who absolutely know what they're talking about when it comes to investments and knowing where to spend their money. I'm not going to say they're going to make money on Atletico Dallas or Dallas Trinity. They know they're going to lose money on this, but there's a measured way to do it that it's an investment. It's a long-term thing. Another thing that Atletico said in a statement, I wish I had saved the statement, actually, it's really good, is that they're building a 100-year soccer team for Dallas. And this, they meant it on the Atletico side, but they mean it on the Trinity side. And there was another snippet in this article that explicitly asked, hey, when there's an economic downturn and a club faces hardship and they own a women's team, the women's team is the first to take the hit usually. And the ownership did not wave it away. They said, we definitely understand that that has been what happened, but if we face any hardship with Trinity, we'll just simply have to explore options. If it involves moving them to a smaller venue, they said we'll have to explore options to keep, like, essentially to keep them afloat. Their goal is to keep Trinity going, to keep Atletico Dallas going, long-term professional clubs for City. They want, and this is also the D1 thing I mentioned on an earlier episode, that Dallas thinks they're D1. This ownership thinks Dallas is D1 as well. They constantly mention how many people live in the metro area and how they think they can reach those people to build up the fan base of these teams to be a very high quality, large, grow it, keep it going. So some hope core for you if you were feeling doomer about the Super League. A bunch of rich people just spent more money on it. Let's go. yes, of course, if we were multimillionaires, I'm sure we would already have a stake in the sun. But it's nice that somebody who knows what they're talking about with money has said something positive about Super League ownership. And maybe, you know, maybe USL HQ can send him over to talk to prospective owners, because he seems pretty happy about the idea of owning a Super League team. And like I said, they would not have bought in if they thought the league was sinking. They're going to know if there's expansion on the horizon. They're going to know if other ownerships are literally investing. That's something that USL HQ is going to be discussing with current owners to convince them to stay on board, you know, because new teams are joining, because new ownership is joining. So yes, keep that in mind. It's not all sunshine and rainbows. Everybody's losing money on soccer. That's how it's been on the men's USL side for a long time. But a few of those teams, but Super League in total is a few right now. A few of those teams are stable. The Rowdies have been around for a long time. Louisville City, Pittsburgh, a lot of Charleston, a lot of these teams have been around for a while now. And so we got to get the women's side to that level as well. So promising things. It's not great that Dallas wanted to fold, but also it was a family, the Neal family started the Trinity, and now it seems like USL headquarters has a different system for finding ownership. They might not have been Super League owners under this new system. So maybe it's okay that they were going to leave, and now if USL's finding new owners, they have better systems in place to prepare them. You know, this is something we were worried about with Spokane. So yeah, kind of an interesting article. I definitely recommend reading the whole thing. Everything I said was like snippets that I remember from reading it. And if you're interested in learning more, Atletico Dallas has been very public on their pages. I think they even had a public event. My friend who's in Dallas went to it and met some of the Atletico Dallas and leadership team, coaching team there. So they have been very like forthcoming to the community about what they're doing. And I think Trinity being rolled into, I was already like impressed with Atletico Dallas, the men's side, and Trinity just got picked up by them. And I thought it was a great thing for them too, because now they'll be led in the same way that I was already admiring. So yeah, I hope that this means that they will continue for a long time. We all can keep the Super League going, and there's new investors in Dallas, and they're really ambitious actually. So maybe we should be worried that Trinity is going to be really good. One thing I will note is that the Neal family, before they exited, did work towards building the roster for this year. That was something specific in the article. He was like, they knew they were out, but they didn't think the team was going away. They thought there would be a solution found. So they did work on building the roster like at the end of last year. So there will be incoming players into Dallas. They should be, you know, at least from the ownership's perspective, competitive. And we'll see, you know, moving forward, what that'll look like. But it's, I think in Dallas, the situation is handled for a while, and we don't need to worry about it. So it's a couple other markets that we might need to worry about, but there might be new markets and, you know, announced soon, or some of these expansions that we were told in the past might come true. So we will see. But yeah, very good article there. Dallas soccer blog, Third Degree. And that was Dennis McGowan doing the reporting there. So shout out to him. Special to this pod today.
Wow, that was a lot.
Yeah. We had a lot of news to cover. But yeah, if we did an episode last week, there wouldn't have been anything. We didn't have the Dallas news. We didn't have any of our signings.
No.
So.
Yeah.
It was all.
That's okay. We took July 4th off.
Yeah. I did not blow my hands off with fireworks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We still got them.
All 10 fingers.
All right. Remember, again, just from up top, if you have any bar recommendations that you know are soccer bars for watch parties, we want to do a heat wave, an RBLR or something. Try and fill that gap that we don't have right now from the sun. And make sure that you're watching us on YouTube at RBLR Sports on YouTube and at RBLR Sun FC everywhere else. I'm Lizzie the Lion on Blue Sky. He's Mom Says I'm Ultra on Twitter.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, it's been a goofy week.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's only Tuesday.
It's Captain. It's only Wednesday as the episode comes out.
Yeah, fair. Oh, all right. That about wraps it up. We will see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.